Number one, stop posting to me on X that I am the reason why all these Met pitchers are getting hurt. Because the last time we had a conversation about Met pitchers, a caller called in and said, I don't want Manaea. I don't want Montes. I want the guys that we have right now. They're doing such a great job. What are we going to do when all these pitchers come back? And I said, baseball has a way of just kind of straightening itself out, and things are going to happen. So it is not my fault that I pointed out the obvious when it comes to injuries when other guys are coming back. The problem is now they may be short of guys coming back to replace the guys that are now all on the injured list. And yeah, it does look like Griffin Canning is going to be out for the rest of the year. And that's really unfortunate because I felt like he was in the midst of a bounce back type of season. He's been a good arm. He's been a good player. He's kind of gotten his career back on track. And then all of a sudden this weird thing happens. And by the way, he's wearing a 3/4 spike. Okay, so we can, Nick Van Exel can look at that and maybe say that.
Yeah.
Maybe a high top would have helped. I don't know. But this was just a really weird deal. And look, these athletes nowadays, and because other people are posting at me, like, we didn't see these injuries way back when. And this Achilles injury is becoming just a real pain in the neck for a lot of people and a lot of teams. I just think these athletes nowadays, for the most part, are wound really, really tight. They really are. They don't have a lot of body fat. I think back in my era, you know, guys were in shape, but you know, we had a little girth to us, and we weren't nearly as tight as these athletes are. And there's no really way to explain this because this is not on AstroTurf. This is a pitcher, you know, misstepping off the mound. And, you know, it's not the basketball court because they're wearing low sneakers. No, it's just a matter of, like, these athletes in this day and age are supremely conditioned for the most part. Not all. Like, Luka Doncic, this is not happening to. You know, Mekhi Becton, this is not happening to. Now, they may have other injuries, and they may be out of breath come the fourth quarter if they don't get themselves straightened out. But this is just a really unfortunate thing that happened to
them. Yeah, I mean, and this is a weird one. Obviously, we don't see it so much in baseball. It's similar to what we've seen in other sports because he is doing a quick movement to try to go somewhere in a non-contact injury, and it snaps. You know, so I did some AI Googling about the rise in Achilles injuries and seeing, like, is it just because we're perceiving it that way, or is it actually happening? Because
happening?
Yeah, but like back at the, like, so Kobe tore his Achilles back in the day. Obviously,
you had tore his Achilles,
right? And then you had
Vinny Testaverde tore his Achilles.
So like that, this is what I'm saying. So like you're making the point. Are we just like, are we more in tune to it now? And I didn't really get a great answer from AI, but it does say while it's difficult to definitively say if there are more Achilles injuries. Without specific data, reports indicate a potential increase in Achilles tendon ruptures, particularly in certain sports. And the NIH, the National Institutes of Health, noted a significant rise in NFL Achilles tendon ruptures after the 2011 lockout. So
I don't know if now, when it comes to like MetLife Stadium and the injuries over there. It, you know, to me, it may be the shoes that the players are wearing.
Well, that's exactly what I got when I was on the field for that game doing my one sideline reporting job when you and Jerry and Phil were up in the booth. That's exactly what I heard from the equipment staff because I was asking about it. And the Philadelphia Eagles equipment staff actually changed the length of the spikes that they normally use on turf to something shorter for MetLife's turf because it grabs more than others. So it's a combination of both, the grabbing and the turf.
At least the professional soccer players don't have to worry about
that. Yeah, I know, as they put grass in for them, and then you got the Jets and the Giants and every other NFL team popping all sorts of knees and Achilles.
You know what other team went to grass this offseason in a
multi-million-dollar
changeover? Was the University of North Carolina football team.
Oh, Bill Belichick?
Yeah, Bill Belichick and Mike Lombardi said, hey, we got to restore the history of the great football programs here I want to, what's the name of that stadium? I forget the name of that stadium. It was a beautiful stadium. It was out in the woods.
Just Google it.
All right, I will. I'm drinking my coffee right now. Why don't you Google? Why don't you do something?
On it.
Keenan something stadium. I think it used to be Keenan something.
By the way, speaking of doing something, Al, you never sent me a show sheet this morning. I meant to tell you that. We were talking poop cruise. I did not get a show sheet from you this morning.
Very strange.
Unless my email is screwed up, but I did not get it.
He did send it out. I didn't see if you were on it.
Maybe he meant to take Jerry off and took me off instead, because Jerry's not here today. I did not get a show sheet today.
So anyway, yeah, North Carolina ripped up their football stadium and put grass down.
Yeah, and obviously the players love grass. Every single player loves grass in the NFL.
I'll tell you that. Yeah, I can confirm that.
Yeah.
Because I played on, you know, the stuff that I played on, and Riverfront, Three River Stadium, the Vet, Old Giant Stadium. I mean, they're some of the worst fields that you could ever possibly play on. And maybe the most enjoyable field that we played on, believe it or not, that I played on anyway, that I liked playing, was Cleveland. It's an old municipal stadium. Mm. And it had the baseball diamond going through it.
Yeah.
And it was a sloppy mess late in the season. But I'd much rather play on that than turf.
Yeah, so
back in those days.
So, like, the field has, or the court has really nothing to do with it in baseball or basketball, definitely in football. And also, the Mayo Clinic said that overuse or insufficient rest between activities can contribute to Achilles tendonitis, which can lead to ruptures. So, that, if you're looking for one answer, wound tight, I like that one as a reason. And also, the fact that these guys train more than they've ever trained.
Yes.
And also, the nature of the game in the NBA is so much more up and down,
it
flying
feels
around.
Right. Yeah, yeah. And when people are saying that, you know, Magic, Bird, Will Chamberlain, you know, I don't remember. They all have suffered some injuries in some capacity. But I don't remember Achilles during that era, you know, when Patrick Ewing was here in the 90s. I don't remember a rash of Achilles. You know, there were some ACLs. There were some. There's always twisted ankles in the NBA. It's just the way it goes. You know, the other thing, too, is it never really happens in hockey either.
Yeah, I mean, you can understand why that is. You know, and there's an array of injuries that happen to the hockey players.
Does it happen a lot in soccer? Like, I don't know.
That's a good question.
Al, can you Google that for us?
I would not
know. Good job,
know.
Al. So Friday morning, I want to see if Al's on it today.
Yeah. Well, he's always in a good mood on Fridays. On Mondays, he comes in miserable, and then on Fridays, he comes in happy. I mean, he's very predictable. It's almost like, you know, when you look up at the sky and you're like, it looks like rain. You know, that's what I could see Al
on
his
Monday
face.
Morning. That's,
you know,
Monday morning.
It looks like he's pissed. It looks like he's happy.
Unless something crazy happened during the weekend and he gets to be the first guy to talk about it.
Yeah, but even then,
McMonagle's been
even then, you know, I worked with a guy in Pittsburgh who got up from his couch and popped his Achilles just from standing up from the couch. And I've been deathly afraid of that happening to me ever since I heard that story.
And by the way, when you and I were playing Bethpage Black.
Yeah.
And we were going up those hills.
I was thinking about it then, too.
I think about it. That's why I go up sideways.
Yeah.
Because two things. I do not want to injure my plantar fasciitis, which I hadn't had to deal with in the last 4 years.
From the good feet store.
That's right. And the other thing, too, is that's part of the whole process, making sure you have the right shoes and you have the right insoles, inserts into your shoes. But I will say that anytime I'm on, like, a golf course now, my age, walking up hills, I am terrified of just the Achilles going.
Yeah.
One of the reasons why I'm not a big pickleball player.
Yeah, I've stopped doing that, too, because I'm afraid of getting hurt.
Man, I love pickleball, but I'm like, man.
I actually had fun playing it, but, I mean, it says it right here, too, in the whole AI thing. That's why you get, you know, like the JAG physical therapy that does commercials here. Dr. Gallucci, who does commercials here. They're talking about the pickleball injuries, because that's been the number one thing with so many people playing and injuring themselves. Here's another one. And I don't know if this actually is true or not, because popping my Achilles is always on my mind.
Yes. Well, now why not? It's top of everybody's mind in sports.
Do you think this is so stupid?
Okay.
But I think about this. Do you think that the constant, like, right foot motion that
I'm using
when I'm driving is wearing it out?
I wouldn't doubt it. I would if something does happen, I would not doubt it. And I know it's really hard to use cruise control when you're on the LIE because it's stop and go.
Oh, well, in the morning, occasionally I can use it. On the way home, never. But yeah, I think about that, and I've been back in the seat a little bit. And then after Griffin Canning's watching that again after the NBA playoffs, that's all I'm thinking about is how I'm going to be breaking, and then the Achilles is going
to pop. There's nothing worse than coming back from out east, driving 2.5 hours. Like for me, it's like it's the outside of my calf that is like hurting, and I'm like, God damn it!
Yeah, a little sciatica too sometimes, running down
100%.
Oh man, we sound old today, but that's fine because a lot of people are experiencing the same things in their cars. So. Yeah, tough for Griffin Canning, tough for the Mets. It was another one of those reclamation projects that David Stearns had gotten mostly right, even though Griffin Canning had some struggles. But it was really good to see in a spot where the Mets didn't think they were going to have to use their bullpen as much as they did, that everybody was phenomenal out of the pen, and they ended up shutting out the Braves. And Pete Alonso, when he goes, this offense goes. There's no doubt about it. And same thing with Lindor. Soto obviously was the only guy hitting when they were losing, but man, if you get those guys or two out of those three guys going at the same time, they're going to be a hell of a lot better. And it was only Soto until like the last couple nights.
Yeah, this game should have been even worse than it was. I mean, in terms of offensive output, they're still not getting much from the bottom of the lineup. There are guys all over the base paths yesterday, but yesterday's hero for me was Austin Warren.
Yeah, and it was
who is this guy now? Where'd he come from?
Yeah, I know, and it was his first win in a couple of years that he had. So, yeah, I mean, it's wherever you could find him at this point. We're not quite in the dog days, but we are reaching them, and you're going to get some unlikely contributors, especially with all these injuries. And this is where that Sean Manaea injury. Now, Montas came back, and he was very good in his first start. That is a good sign. But this Manaea setback thing is a tough pill to swallow. Now
loose bodies in his elbow, man.
With I believe it's just a singular loose body that was 7 millimeters long. I think
7 millimeters long, or like seven. What do you think? It's like an inchworm or something, or do you think it's like a round pebble?
It's a good question. I don't know. I was thinking long.
But I was thinking round.
Yeah, you're probably right. It's probably round. But, yeah, that's a tough one now with another injury. So if he was coming back and Montas was coming back, like, all right, perfect. But now, who knows? And you've predicted that we won't see Sean Manaea at all.
And so, look, I don't get any great joy out of this. I'm just trying to keep Met fans up to date on the latest and, the injury aspect and realize that this is a long baseball season, that this is going to happen to every single team. And somewhere along the line, you just got to dig in and find out a way to win. And to me, Austin Warren was like the epitome of that yesterday. Here goes down Griffin Canning's pitching a great game. Somebody get up in the pen. Let's go with Austin. All right, Austin, you're up. And go out there and do what he did. That was, that's a totally unexpected performance at that moment.
Catch all the play-by-play with Susan Waldman and Dave Sims on the home of Yankees radio, The Fan.
We are live from the Cadillac Club on a big Thursday as the Mets get set to take on the Atlanta Braves. Evan and Tiki here till 6:30, and joining us right now, the man that I tried to get a long-term contract. I did everything I could with the beard, but he is here, and hopefully will be here forever, the great Pete Alonso. Pete, thank you very much for coming on, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Thank you for being here. So what do you think so far of your season? You got off to an unbelievable start. Obviously, the team struggles recently. Give me your kind of impression on what you've done so far this year.
Personally, I'm very, very pleased, and I think the biggest thing I'm really the most stoked about is just the consistency, and this is, for me, something that I really worked hard on in the offseason, but once you get into the daily fight, the daily grind of the season, you got to hold on to the discipline, hold on to like the little details in order to keep continuing to compound in good days. So for me, just stoked about the consistency.
What was the biggest difference between previous years and this one, preparation-wise, that allowed you to get off to the start you got off to?
I think for me, mechanically last year, like looking at the season as a whole, I just wasn't necessarily my best self every single day. And sometimes it's not about really, I don't know. It's like you do all the work and then like you're so over focused and like you're too zoomed in. And then once like kind of the playoffs came around, it's like, oh, this, it just clicked. And then it's like I kind of look back and it's like, okay, I want to be this guy, this version of myself every single day. Because like when I look at the playoffs, it's like, wow, that's like that's really in a sense of like who I think I should be, who I think I am as a ball player. And it's like, how do we repeat that every single day? So the workout, the activations and everything, the cage work, everything is like, how do we keep replicating that? Or in the long, it's a long season, 162 right. games, but how can I replicate
now,
that?
Now, how hard is that? Because look, as a football player, we're playing once a week and right. then we eat a bye week in the middle of the season. So it never feels like I was overwhelmed by having to perform. How hard or discipline does that take to do it every single day?
I mean, there's no secret sauce, but it's the repetitiveness. Mm-hmm. It's like it's in the baseball season that's so difficult. It's like it's actually funny because when I'm like, man, Tiki's going to be on the show, sick. So if I had to explain like 2 weeks of games, so that's 14 games, that's equivalent to one NFL game.
Right.
Which is if you put that into perspective, it's like...
It's a lot of baseball.
But if you were like in an NFL season, like how many times did you guys end up perfect?
Yeah, very few.
So it's like if you lose right. one game, it's like, okay, we'll bounce back next week. Or right. if we get a bye week, okay, we can regroup and then we'll get back at it. But baseball, it's like 14 games in the baseball season is equivalent to one
right.
game.
Right, so basically you guys just had a week of – you just lost one game.
In
this was
terms,
football.
Yes.
So how did you come out – how do you think about trying to come out of this as a team? Not you individually, but as a
By
team.
By the way, before you continue, yeah. I don't think you understand you saying that means so much to me. I had a fight with my former co-host yeah. for 2 weeks when I tried to explain, hey, baseball, yep. you know, every game is football. It's like 2 weeks. And he thought I was an idiot. So hearing you on WFA and explain the baseball football equivalence.
It's just a way to relate, Evan.
Thank you. No. I made the point for 2 years. I got right. yelled at. Now Pete's made it. Thank you, Pete. Now please continue your question. I apologize.
Now you
that just
me
meant a
track.
Lot to me. The team has been struggling
right,
lately.
They struggled. So you basically lost the game in football terms, but you're starting to turn it around because you won a game last night and it was pretty convincing fashion. But as a team, how do you get through that 2 week period where you're just, man, we suck today?
Well,
or we sucked for the last week. How do you get through that?
Well, how you get through it is like you continue to trust in the group. I mean, the talent's undeniable. The group's chemistry, togetherness, the way that we're gelled, the way that we've mm-hmm. stuck together this entire time, it's been great. So, I mean, yes, the past couple weeks haven't been the best. For sure. Yeah, no doubt. But if you look at our overall record, it's like if you were to tell us, like, hey, this is your record. Like if we were to tell every single person, like, hey, this is what the Mets record's going to be halfway through the season, you're going to be like, okay, great, awesome, good. Good thumbs up, that's good. But I think for us, it's like we know that there's a lot more meat on the bone left for us. And what we can accomplish is literally, like, the expectations are sky high, but, like, sometimes you need to get punched in the mouth. And for us, like that's what happened, and we want to keep continuing to respond every single day and not take any little moment for granted.
Speaking of being punched in the mouth, and I can't blame you for 1999, you aren't here. Why do the Braves always punch the Mets in the mouth? Going back to 22, going back to this season, why is it always them who are doing the punching?
No one is ever going to remember. I always hear Braves, Braves, Braves. Braves were a really good team. But there was a week that we played two teams. So the Washington Nationals, I think, won maybe 70 games or less. They won 2 out of 3 against us at home. And then the Chicago Cubs won 73-ish games, and then they swept us.
Yeah.
So... Okay, the Braves, phenomenal team. Like, and if we look back at the scores, it's like, okay, those are like really, really good baseball teams. And it's like, you know what? Sometimes when you get beat, you have to tip your cap. But there's games where, like, hey, maybe against a lackluster team, like
you're talking about 22. Like, you look at those games yeah. more than the Brave games. Is 100%.
100%. And then also, I remember this one game in Oakland. Jacob DeGrom.
Jake got bombed. Remember
yeah,
that? Like, which is rare.
No doubt. No doubt. And it's like, I mean, there's so many games where it's like you look back and it's like, I'm not looking at the necessarily Atlanta ones because those are coin flip. Two heavyweight teams going head to head. Anything can happen.
So there's nothing here with the Braves. It's not like there's an intimidation factor or there's something about that building because even the series last week, maybe it's a slump, but overall, the Braves have had more success against you guys than anybody. You don't think in that room there's any kind of thing about Atlanta and who's in that room and who that team is?
I mean, there are they got great talent, but again, like, I don't think it's anything more than what it is. Again, when you go against good teams, sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. I mean, it's legitimately a coin flip, but when you go against lesser opponents, like, for example, I look back in 22 against those two teams, it's like we could have picked up, if we split the series at home, we're champagne showering and hosting and hosting a DS series,
right,
as opposed to a wild card. So, or even if we win one more game, we win one more game, even if we lost against the Cubs, lost the series instead of get swept. I mean, there's little things throughout the year. It's like, oh, if we didn't give away here in June. Oh, if we didn't give away here in April. When something, we didn't play clean baseball, but sometimes you get beat.
Right. That's got to be mind-numbing to think about a game making that big of a difference. And it
happens all the time. Look at last year.
Of course.
I would agree with you if it wasn't always the Braves. If it wasn't always them.
Yeah, but I think,
I'd say, sure, you're right. It's a coin flip.
But
they're good.
You said this yesterday, and you're absolutely right.
I said something right yesterday. What was that?
You did. You said it's circumstance, in a sense, because of who you faced. Right? Yeah. You had Schwellenbach, and you had Strider for four of these games. Right? You've lost five of them. You've had two of their best pitchers twice. So, I mean, some of it is circumstance, and I think that's how you have to look at it.
Right? No,
they have great players as well.
I mean, yeah, like, there are starters, and then also, like, Sale, like, he had an absolutely spectacular outing, and he had his Cy Young stuff. Like, he was unbelievable. So, like, and as an offense where not all of us were clicking at the right time, where it's like, hey, like, big league pitching, like elite big league pitching,
Let me ask you something about that, because Evan and I have talked about this a couple of times. How it feels like the pitching early in the season was so dominant. I mean, you lead in the league in ERA, really team ERA, just including the bullpen, and it felt like, man, the pitching is carrying this team. I know Juan Soto's not hitting, Pete's doing great, but eventually the bats are going to have to wake up. The bats are going to have to take their cues
when the
pitching kind of falls off a little bit. Do you guys think about that? Like, is there a relationship between, man, he's struggling today, we got to go get some hits?
Well, we got to put up runs every day. It's, I mean, because no matter who we're facing, it can be, I mean, it's the big leagues. Anyone can go get you at any single time. So no matter who we're facing, like, it could be anybody. And they're in the big leagues for a reason, because they got the best stuff in the world. Mm-hmm. So, we're motivated to score runs every single day.
Do you think you're getting the same pitches to hit over the last 3 weeks as you got earlier this season?
For me, I think that I think the league is, like, bearing down a little bit more. Like, I've noticed a lot more pitches on the pitchers' pitches on the corners, or just off, or just on the corner. So it's just a matter about not sticking to the middle of the plate and capitalizing on mistakes when they do.
But it's also, like, maybe it's because I'm the official defender of Pete Alonso on WFN. I don't know if you know that. But my excuse has been, I don't want to knock your teammates too much. I'll do it. You don't have to say it. You got crap behind you. No one's protecting you, which is why in spring training I said, Pete, they should hit you second. Let Soto hit behind you. Don't you think you would benefit from getting a little bit more protection? No offense to McNeil. He's fine, whatever. But don't you think it would benefit you to get a little bit more protection in your lineup, and that my idea was right and you should bat second ahead of Juan Soto?
Well, I mean, I think Jeff has got over a 900 OPS from the second half on. So, like, Jeff's been doing it. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, regardless of where I'm at in the lineup, like, for me, they don't want to miss over the plate, because it's like, okay, like, there's, like, for us, it's like, okay, like, me and Juan, no matter where we're at in the lineup, like, they're going to be like, okay, we're not going to allow these guys to put the ball in play, because these guys can leave in the park at any time. Like, Francisco's the same way. When Nimmo is hitting the ball like the way he has been, when he's hitting the ball, it's hit hard and far. So it's just how the game is. It's like, no pitcher wants to just lay something in the zone, because, like, we have a lineup, a deep lineup where, like, if the ball's hit, put in play, it's put in play hard, chances are it's probably going to go over the wall.
So just so you know, Evan asked that exact question of Mindy at the beginning of the season, and he looked at him like he had three heads.
Yeah, he didn't like my idea.
He said no flat out.
Yeah. Do you remember what you said? You said you wanted to lead off. That's what you said.
I'd say, hey,
Have you ever led off in your life?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it was like AAU game. Somebody forgot their jersey, and then their parents, like, went
home. And how did you do?
Oh, it was great. I got a first pitch heater and it whacked a double. It was great.
I mean, you're right. Maybe you should lead off.
First pitch heater right there.
Hey, team slumps, you may try something like that.
Well, you won't try what Tommy suggested yesterday. Tommy had this wacky idea yesterday to play zone offense with the Mets lineup. So that means either you, Lindor, or Juan Soto hitting leadoff. One of the other two hitting fourth, and the other last one hitting eighth or seventh.
Yeah, it's a terrible idea, Pete. I know.
Is that a terrible idea as everybody thought it was yesterday, or is there some merit to it? Nobody would have thought that like Shohei Ohtani would be leading off.
Now, Pete, before you answer, I'm Tommy. So just know before you answer. So when Evan says he hates it, he means he secretly likes it.
No, I don't.
Pete loved the idea yesterday.
I was like, why not?
You just said you led off before, and this isn't knocking anybody. I'm positive, Tommy. It's just about spreading out. It's not knocking anyone. It's just about seeking a problem and finding a solution.
It sounded different when he was.
I'm an idea
Pete
man.
Pete, you're allowed to punch him if you want.
I thrive on enthusiasm, Pete. Come on. He's speechless. Is that a good thing?
No.
Oh, damn.
I got. I have no words.
No words.
No words.
It's that dumb.
That's never been suggested. Ever.
Maybe just take a little time. Can you pass it along to Mendy for me? Just say that there's this idea. You spread the four best hitters out throughout the lineup. That way, every inning you have one of your best hitters.
It's not going to work.
You
Tommy.
Get to lead
you,
off.
You got to give this one up. You got to pass this one.
Just give him a time to think.
No.
No. Not even a maybe.
That's. Yeah, hard no.
Hard no. Thank you very much. We're talking to Pete Alonso from the Cadillac Club as the Mets get set to take on the Atlanta Braves. The last few games, you have made incredible plays. You made a diving play the other night, perfect throw to the pitcher covering. For that little stretch where you had the miscue throws, including the one to Senga, was it ever getting mental or was it just a defensive slump? How do you explain what was going on for that stretch?
I mean, for me, the one in New York, I mean, I just zoot it, you know, and sometimes it happens. I probably watched like every angle, like in slow motion. I'm like, yeah, my feet were set, my arm angle was good, and then I just zoot it,
right?
Which happens, unfortunately, and in that spot, it's going to be amplified, and that was a big moment. Just zoot a routine play. The one to Stanek, I think for me, I could have done a little bit better job of setting my feet. I didn't set my feet there. It's like, okay, that one, it's like, okay, could have set my feet. Senga, that was a tough play in the hole, and I just had to get it to him. He's an athletic guy. So I'm like, okay, get the ball to like his chest area, and then he made a hell of a play. I think, yeah, it's just a matter about sticking to it, sticking to the routines, even though things didn't go right a couple times. But, again, you just stick to the routine, trust the work that you put in.
When he got hurt, you were emotionally broke up a little bit about it, looked like it on the field. But afterwards, at least from what we heard, his interpreter came and said he probably pulled it running over. Did that make a difference to you?
No.
No.
No, because, I mean, just being involved and, like, knowing that kind of, like, just being involved in it, knowing that it wasn't a perfect throw, it's like I just still feel, and also I feel bad because like last year he was grinding, grinding to get back healthy, and something similar happened where like he was back and then he was hurt and then he came back for the postseason, thankfully. But
right,
yeah, just from what he's been through at a personal level, like being missing a ton of time last year with stuff, and then it's like, yeah, I just hate to see that for him.
But your confidence throwing to first base, all good right now?
Yeah, it's great. Yeah,
good. You are about to become a father in a few months.
Yes.
Congratulations.
Congrats,
man. Thank you.
Have
Thank
you, you started breaking down, all right, if the baby's born on this date, I got to get on a plane here.
Wait, do you know the sex?
Yeah, it's going to be a boy.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you.
You can't tell us the name. That's bad luck.
No, I can't do that. Do you have a name?
I mean, we probably have a laundry list full.
Yes.
Like, we're probably just going to end up waiting till he gets here.
If you want to go with Evan, I approve it.
Oh, God, fine. Thank you.
He's going to say, it looks like me, Junior. He's Junior.
Have you thought about the arrival date and where it may fall on the calendar and everything around that?
Yeah. Yeah, I have. Yeah, hopefully we can thread a needle. I mean, hopefully. But again, like, there's a thing where it's like, okay, like, man makes plan, God laughs. So we'll see. We'll take it as it comes. I mean, the number one thing I just want first and foremost, I want the safety of my wife and safety of the child. I mean, that's number number 1A and 1B priority right there. So whatever, however the timing and whatever unfolds, like, I mean, it's going to work out. I have a firm believer that it's going to work out.
100%. Will you be a New York Met for life, Pete?
We'll see. I mean, I love it here. Like, everyone's treated my family so well. Like, the personnel has been, like, obviously awesome. Like, I've grown up here in this organization. Like, and for me, understanding the responsibility of playing in New York, like, I've embraced that. And also, like, last year, like, experiencing the playoffs and relishing in that experience here, like, that is, like, that is the pinnacle of big time baseball. And no, I love it. And I hope that the, you know what, here, you know what, here, call David, call Steve.
I'm trying. Yeah,
if you want to negotiate here.
I heard Scott's very tough to negotiate with, though. I don't know if I can.
Wait, have you and Scott had that conversation about the opt-out, or when will you have that conversation?
Whenever the season's over, however it unfolds. But for me,
so like, no talks now.
No. I mean, we just play ball, focus on winning. That's really it.
Yeah, you were teammates with this guy for a while. I'm just curious, if the Rangers continue to struggle, and dear Jacob DeGrom becomes available, knowing him, do you think he'd waive his no trade to come back to New York?
He almost fits a no-hitter.
No, I know, but the Texas Rangers still stink. Do you, knowing him, because that's the real key to this, do you think he would want to come back? Be honest with me. I'll take it however you say it.
Well, I mean, he has, like, he's a guy who grew up here. But again, like, this is all, like, hypothetical stuff. And that's a decision that him and his family have to make, like, if that's something your organization does. But hopefully, I just want what's best for Jake. And I mean, right now he's pitching unbelievable. Like, there's nothing more that I want for him to win his third Cy Young and pretty much punch his ticket to Cooperstown. He's an unbelievable dude. And for him missing time with the surgery, like, and being away from the game, like, I think he's really motivated and really invigorated with this opportunity he has. And I just hope wherever he ends up, no matter what jersey, I just hope he keeps shoving. Like, because
he's been great.
Yeah. I mean, he's an unbelievable dude, great teammate, and yeah, I hope he wins a Cy Young this year.
When are you gonna break Darryl's home run record? You've hit one home run in 15 games. I say that with love. You know,
yes.
I love you.
No,
we got to
sure.
get this thing going. When are we gonna break this record?
Whenever pitchers keep leaving the ball out over the plate. Whenever I get pitches to hit, you know what I'm saying?
And lay off the sliders off the plate.
You know what?
I've noticed you chasing recently.
Oh, you're a great coach.
Yeah.
Andy.
Aren't I a good coach?
You're
just lay off those
so
pitches.
Good, especially like when they look right down the middle until they're not. It's really – okay, got it. Thanks. Appreciate you.
Pete, man, we love you.
Yeah,
I want you to be a Met for life.
Appreciate
and I want
that.
You to hit a home run tonight. All
thank
right?
you.
It'll make us feel like we contributed to it.
That's
all right?
Honestly, like one – that's it. If you want me to break the record, you're only saying, you can get one. That's crazy.
Fine. Hit me three tonight, Pete.
I haven't done it in a big league career yet. That's what I'm talking about.
There you go. That's what I want to see. Thank you, Pete. We appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
Pete Alonso, live from the Cadillac Club. Quick break. We'll get back to your phone calls. Evan and Tiki here on The Fan.
The NBA draft is an absolute disaster. It really has become a joke. It went from must-watch to, really, I'm starting to avoid watching it. The NBA draft coverage is deplorably bad
at this point. I didn't really get into it last night. I saw a lot of it on social media and was just paying attention to it that way, and that's unfortunately now the way of these drafts where you're just like, you go on social media, boom, this team's going to take this player, and then you see a bunch of the clips on there. It did make me a little nostalgic and miss how much I used to love it. Although it is convoluted and always has been, and maybe even now more so than ever, with the trading of the picks and the changing of the hats and the jerseys. Like, that was a thing years ago. Like, this player selected by so-and-so, and then he's traded 5 minutes later to the Bucks. And then really what was happening last time, my friends in a group chat, and they were sending me some stuff from, like, the 2018 draft.
Okay.
Where you saw just the ineptitude of either the announcers or the Knicks themselves. Like, oh, no, the Knicks shouldn't take Shai Gilgeous-Alexander because they have Frank Ntilikina and Moutier or whatever it was.
Oh,
like,
God,
oh,
almighty,
God. But so these things really you don't know about until years down the road, but especially without the Knicks having a first round pick, for me it didn't really do much.
Well, listen, I was watching the Yanks and the Mets, obviously, and then of course I knew it was on, and I'm gonna probably be more tuned in tonight. I want to see if RJ Lewis, some St. John stories, maybe Kadari Richmond late second round, whatever, so that I'm more interested in that. Of course I wanted to see what the Nets did last night. I am surprised the Nets didn't find a way to make a trade. Not that I want to do a ton of net stuff right now, but you have five picks. You take four guards. You don't move up. I don't know what the hell they were doing. It was weird. And, you know, not to knock the three international prospects they took. I don't know anything about them. They took two domestic kids, who one at Michigan State and the other from Duke. So there's a little name recognition there. But I texted Stephen A. last night because I actually forgot what channel the draft was on, right? You know, because everything's changed over there. Who the hell knows? I used to always know what channel this stuff was on. Now I don't. And I actually found it quickly. I'm like, oh, it's probably on ESPN. So I put it on. And I think it was like Malika Andrews and Big Perk and Jay Billis and, I don't know, somebody else. And I don't see Stephen A., right? I text Stephen A. I'm like, dude, can you please go and save this show? This show needs some juice. This is rough. Why aren't you working this? And he's like, I am. He's like, I'm on ABC. And then, to be honest with you, I was so disinterested from what I watched at that point, I didn't even go to ABC. I just went back to the Yankees and the Mets. Now, this is the biggest problem, and I will defend the NBA in this regard. It's this, I don't know how they can help this. The problem with the draft is there's no familiarity. And if you don't know somebody, I don't know how you can conjure up any real emotion. Now, growing up, this is a lot of years ago, but you had guys that we watched for 2-3 years, some four, many four, back in the day. And you're like, oh, Big East, oh, ACC, oh, Big Ten, here we go. Like, you knew everybody that was drafted. I've seen, like, Edgecombe from Baylor, who went third, because St. John's played him. If St. John's didn't play him, I wouldn't watch Baylor at all. Nobody knows any of these players, Sal.
Yeah, which is why I can't get into it. I know nothing about them. So why am I supposed to get excited or not excited? Or especially if the Knicks aren't there. So if your team does not have a first-round pick and there's no concern about who they might be taking, and even if they did, it's like, okay, well, years ago we go back to the Obi Toppin and Haliburton thing. So, okay, leading up to the draft, you get an idea of who might be available when your team is selecting. You learn a little bit about the players, maybe some you've seen in college, maybe some you don't know, overseas, whatever it may be. And you start to think, okay, well, I would take this player because this is what I value. I want a guard or whatever. They need a big, and I like this guy. I like that he's a rebounder. Like, I remember, I hated the Kevin Knox pick years ago.
Ugh.
Hated Kevin Knox. Loved the Mitchell Robinson pick, or at least liked it and was intrigued by it because of some of the stuff that they said about him. Hey, he just picked up basketball, but he's got great size and defense and rebounding, all those different things. So there are things you could take away from it. But that's why I can't go nuts about the draft anymore. It's different, too, with the NBA draft versus the NFL draft. With the NFL draft, there's much more of an immediate impact. Where with the NBA draft, who the hell knows with these guys? Even some of the top guys, unless it's a surefire, no doubt about a thing. And then even then, you still don't know, because how many times have you seen those top guys miss?
Well, and then what happens, you know, because they're drafted younger and younger,
yeah,
and younger,
right,
and they're coming in less polished and less polished, and they don't quite have that full grown man strength yet, which I understand that that's part of the process. But a lot of times these younger players now, they develop at these, you know, moribund franchises or with these moribund franchises. And then as they begin to mature and start to hit stride, they leave. They go to other teams for big money.
Yeah, that's why, just to me, the NBA and the system is broken with the salary cap, with the contracts. It's hard for me to get into outside of the Knicks, even with the Nets. And I'll be rooting for the Nets. Like, I hope the Nets have a good team.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
It'd be fun if they're competent, or maybe they somehow do land Giannis or whatever, and then they can become relevant. I think it could be good for sports talk and for the city, even though the Nets will never be, I don't care how good they get, they'll never be the Knicks. I mean, that's been proven many, many times over. But, like, even I didn't talk to Evan about this, but I think Hoff was saying, or you were saying something.
Hoff was saying, he reached out to Evan,
yeah,
right?
Tell him
about the picks.
And he was like, yeah. I mean,
and he was so excited for the draft. You know,
correct.
I mean, listen, he doesn't talk Nets all the time, but when Evan talks Nets on the show, you could tell he's genuinely enthusiastic. He loves his team. He knows the roster. You know, he knows Marks. He knows the organization. I guess he was like, you know, whatever. Not a fun night.
Do you think he's more excited about the Nets draft or Juan Soto last night?
Let's see. I think it was his. I'm trying to think first where his attention was more, because Nets did have five.
Right.
I think that Evan was, this might be wrong, I think he was more into the Nets last night.
Hoff, you have an did you guys do a Rico Bronya podcast last night?
We are scheduled to have three Rico Bronyas. The one day off was yesterday. He said, we are not doing a Rico because he's going to be locked into the draft.
Oh, and, so I was right.
And he stayed true to that.
Stay true to that.
Now, they will be, by the way, their show will be out at Citi Field today for the finale of the Mets and Braves four-game series. They'll have Pete Alonso on at 3:15. Very curious to see what Pete says.
Wow.
Especially now that he's been going through a little bit of a funk here. All right, so Soto, 888-808-1019. Soto, BT.
Yep.
You know, as the Mets now reach their halfway point, this is it, 81 games so far. Soto, all of a sudden, with this incredible month. And just before we even get into him, I just want to preface it by saying this. Like, you know, when you and I joke around how much I love Soto, yesterday we were talking about being a pants-off move with the caller, all that stuff. I've wanted him forever. And there's a reason why. It's not, oh, well, how come you kiss Soto's ass, but you're critical of Pete or this or that? First of all, no player is above getting criticized at any point. If Yankee fans could boo Aaron Judge after he broke the home run record, then that's how we are in this town, and that should be accepted for everybody. But there's a reason why I wanted Juan Soto so bad. There's a reason why I love Juan Soto so much. You're seeing it in June. There are very few players that can do what he has done. Like, there just aren't enough players that are capable of doing that. Now, factor in from the Mets franchise perspective, he's breaking records already with one good month for Juan Soto. He's doing something that's never been done in the history of the Mets, and he hasn't even really gotten going yet. Wait till he starts hitting with guys on base. That'll be a totally different story. But this is the reason why you go out there and get a superstar like this and you pay $765 million because of the player's potential and ability to go on a run like this.
Well, you better keep doing it because they're going to need it, because I still don't like a lot of the sticks that they roll out there. It's, you know, you beat the Braves. You had to beat them. And listen, he was fantastic, and he's been on this terrific role. But because of the way his, this is just a bigger issue pertaining to his season, because the way he started and the way the numbers weren't there, even though he was hitting the ball pretty hard, and we talked about that quite a bit, you know, right now Juan Soto in the middle of this tear, and it's a tear, is on pace for 38 home runs, which you'll always take. You'll always take that. And 90 RBIs, which is obviously much lower than you want for a guy with Lindor in front of him. I mean, 90 RBIs, you need more than that.
But in a year where he hasn't been hitting with runners in scoring position and had a very down first 2 months from, can't even say bad, because for his bad is better than most. But think about what you're saying here. Oh, 2 weeks ago, the numbers were not projecting that way. If I would have said he's going to hit 30, and as a matter of fact, we had this conversation.
Yeah.
And we didn't think he was coming anywhere near that. And the fact that he's going to get right now on pace for 38, whatever you said, 38 homers and 90 RBI in year one, where it was looking like it was going to be a down year for Soto. And that's with one good month. There's still plenty of season left. Like, he's going to end up having a typical Juan Soto season.
I don't know about that, because the way it started, he doesn't have the luxury anymore of having another rough month. I mean, not that, you know, you got to trade him if he dies. There's no recourse, but statistically speaking, like, if he were to have, whether it's in July or August or September, you know, a month where he hits, and again, I'll keep it up in the neighborhood of his standards. It's not going to look like Pete Alonso's looked for the last 10 days. I can promise you that. I don't think ever he's going to look like that. Let's say in one of those 3 months he goes 239, you know, OPS 730, like, not horrendous, but obviously a massive drop from what you expect from him. Well, now that's going to absolutely impact the totality of the season, because now it's not one bad month, it's two. So the ride is fun, even as, you know, as somebody who doesn't think long term it's worth the money, even though the Mets had to do it. It's just fun to watch him hit the baseball and square it up and do his thing. But because of the one bad month, you don't really have much of a runway to have another bad one. Otherwise, the numbers are going to, it's going to be a down year one.
Other than the fact that he's human, I have no reason to believe he's going to have a bad month.
Like, I mean, we'll see. Don't know. I mean, I don't think I'd put money on it to happen, but he better not, unless you guys make another trade, because I don't see anybody else doing anything.
I mean, the Mets team story is a different one. For me, it's about Juan Soto. Like, yesterday is not a great team win. I mean, they barely beat, you know, you win one game out of six against Atlanta. That's embarrassing. So they've got work to do. If they don't follow it up tonight, I'm talking about Soto. And if it were me, I'd be looking, if I'm David Stearns and Steve Cohen, I'm saying, okay, well, you know, we talk about question marks and problems and identifying that. I'm looking at Soto and saying, this is the guy that I want to build everything around. As opposed to some thought that, well, he's going to fit in here with what we had. No. You make it about Juan Soto. That's how great he is. Whatever he wants to do, I don't even care if he's selfish. Because you see some of First of all, did you see his reaction to that second home run?
I did. He was very animated.
Because he knew
very animated.
That it broke Jimmy Fox's record for youngest players with multi-home run games, whatever. I personally don't give a crap about that. Multi-home run games before they're 27. Who cares? But Juan Soto, it's important to him. It's important to me. You know what? You care about it, Juan. I care about it. And then even his excitement in the postgame afterward, now he was kind of being like, well, yeah, it's about the team and winning first, which is
about
nice.
With Gelb on the field? Because he was on the field with Gelb as well.
Yeah, I think in the postgame, I saw both, but I think this was in the post. Whatever locker room stuff.
He's very calm. He's just robotic. He's on autopilot.
But he could say like it's about the team and priority to the win, which I do believe to a certain extent. But what really got him excited, like you can't hide it, was the fact
he broke
the record, which is fine. Let him be himself because he's a beast. He's an animal. He's competitive. He's got all the money. He's not complacent. He wants to be great. I wish everybody else there would have that same attitude and the same confidence to do that. So while Pete Alonso carried them for the first part of the year, Lindor as well, Juan Soto brings a different element that this team has not had, whether you go back to Harvey, who was obviously a pitcher, or Piazza before him. That has been lacking, that alpha male, I am a stud, I got the pitcher beat, and there's nothing they can do about it. Now, again, the only thing that's missing is with guys on base, once he starts clicking through, instead of these solo homers, going to be two-run homers, three-run homers, then it's really going to be taken off. But I think we're witnessing going to be the best offensive player in the history of the New York Mets franchise.
I'm not going to push back on that. I mean, the way you framed that, he should be. I mean, that's what they signed him for. And now you see, and listen, we saw it last year. We've seen it other years, so it's not stunning. He's a hell of a hitter. I got to tell you, though, like the selfishness, right? If some people think Juan Soto selfish, if there's any sport you can be selfish in, it's baseball. Like, if you're selfish in basketball, that is a direct detriment. Like, I'm hunting shots and I'm just doing things out of the concept of the team, either offensively shooting or defensively cheating, which leaves my guy, at risk at the rim, whatever it might be, not doing a defensive assignment. The selfish nature of basketball can kill a team. Even this was a big knock on Mark Gastineau back in the day when he was playing. He was so selfish to get a sack so he could do a stupid dance and get the numbers, right? That he would basically sell out, and that's why Klecko, Marty Lyons, and Abdul Salam, rest in peace to Abdul, that's why they were really bothered, aside from the fact that he was a nut job, Gastineau, and on steroids and all the other stuff. He would not care about stopping the run. His mission was, I want my numbers. Me. And the way you do that is running the ball, whatever. Sack, oh, they're passing, I'm going for it. In baseball, if you're selfish, unless you expand the strike zone, which he never does,
right,
because you don't want to walk, which he does more than anybody historically, then selfishness in baseball is fine. I have no issue with that.
You know, that's a great point that I've never really thought of it like that, because the idea of selfish is not a good thing, especially in team sports.
Always has a negative connotation.
Correct.
But
in this particular case, what's the harm? Now, if he's struggling and takes that into the field with him, whatever, then I could say, hey, you're letting a team down. Like, just because you're struggling, or if the team's winning and he's struggling.
And he's not happy.
Yeah, well, I mean, there was a little bit of that early on, but I don't think it was a detriment to the team. I think he was just trying to get acclimated and obviously frustrated. And it wasn't like he was being all about himself and making it all about him. He was clearly frustrated. I'm sure he was happy that they're winning. But Juan Soto caring about records and being great, that's only going to help the team. Because it's motivation for him to be great, which if he continues to be great, the Mets are going to win more often than not.
And then what happens, and this is more downstream, as these younger prospects, some of whom are still in the minors, right? Because we really don't know, even though Mauricio's been starting to show a little bit, finally.
And now he's going to go back down.
I know he is, but at least he goes down with confidence here, right? The standard, and this is about the floor versus the ceiling, the ceiling for the Mets. And the floor's too often been low, and the ceiling has too often has been high enough. And you look at the great franchises, you want young players to look at somebody and say, wow, historically, I mean, look at who I'm playing with. The young now hasn't really made the young Yankee players great yet, but at least they have Aaron Judge to set that tone. And now for the Mets' perspective, even though I think he's a little reticent to be a leader, I don't think he wants to be that. And that's fine. You can have Lindor for that. You don't have to be the leader of everything. You lead by hitting. But the other thing last night that jumped out to me, and I got to tell you, even more than Soto, because I expect Soto to do damage, the fact that Clay Holmes threw up and into Acuña, you mentioned it, up and into Acuña, I circle that more than I circle Soto's night. I didn't know if Holmes had the chops to do it. I know Soto's a hell of a hitter, so tip of the cap to Holmes. It's about freaking time that somebody resisted the Atlanta Braves. And I tweeted about this two nights ago.
Yeah.
I said, who's going to hit him in the back? Who's going to make him wear one? Like, I thought the Mets were too accepting of his stupid dances and gyrations. Props to Clay Holmes. Attaboy.
You look at the Mets lineup every single night, like tonight, Jeff McNeil is not exactly protection. And so I think it would benefit Pete Alonso to maybe hit number two, maybe get that kind of protection from a Juan Soto. And I even floated earlier this week, said it to Mendy, how about leading off Juan Soto? How about going Soto, Alonso, Lindor as my 1-2-3? And Tommy said, I love that idea. I was like, wow, me and Positive Tommy on the same page. Earlier today, Positive Tommy said, Evan, I got an even crazier idea for the Mets lineup. And I said, is this private or do you want to talk about this on the air? He's like, on the air. I said, okay, don't tell me. I want to be completely surprised. So I honestly have no idea what Tommy's lineup idea is. Before he tells us, do you think it's going to be stupid?
No, I think it's going to be brilliant.
Brilliant. Okay. Sean, do you think his lineup idea is going to be stupid or brilliant?
Whose idea is it?
Tommy Lugauer's Met lineup idea.
Then I think you know the answer.
Well, I would say some stupid ideas end up ultimately being brilliant.
Tommy?
Yes.
Before you say it, do you think I'm going to think it's a stupid idea or brilliant idea?
I think your initial reaction is going to be, it's stupid. And then you're going to do a Rico, and you're going to probably recycle it and say, you know what? Lukey, maybe he was onto something there.
Well, that's not recycling. That's me coming to my, hey, Lukey was right.
Or that, yeah, yeah.
I'm all about giving credit
here,
right or wrong.
But sure.
Yeah. Recycling would be making believe it's mine.
Well, that's fair.
The way Hoffman did with Tiki years ago with the Daniel Vogelbach Juan Soto stat. I did some math on Soto after the San Diego trade and Vogelbach after the Met trade, and I was like, man, it's crazy. These guys have the same numbers over a one-month period.
Right.
And so Hoff's like, oh, that's pretty cool. Hands it to Tiki, gives it to him on the air, and I'm like, Hoff, I gave you that stat. And Hoff passed it off like his own.
No credit.
No credit, which is okay. I don't mind. All right, Tommy, your crazy lineup idea.
Okay, so we could all agree that the bottom of the Mets order has not been good at all. They struggle with that. There are some valleys in the lineup, right?
Yes.
We're getting beat man-to-man. I think we have to play a zone. So my idea here is, and the lineup tonight is Lindor, Nimmo, Soto, Alonso. They're four best hitters, really the only four hitters that are contributing at all.
Mm-hmm.
So what I mean by playing zone is we have to stretch it out. Pete Alonso bats leadoff. Soto in the cleanup spot. Pete Alonso bats seventh, and we could bat Nimmo ninth. That way...
But you said Alonso twice, so you're saying Lindor should bat seventh?
I'm sorry. Lindor seventh. I apologize. So we're going to go Pete Alonso first, Soto fourth, Lindor seventh, Nimmo ninth. That way, no matter where you're at in the lineup, you have a hitter there that is contributing. When you clump them all there, one through four, you're going to have these innings where you have six, seven, eight coming up, and you got no shot. That way, you always guarantee there's a inning where you have either Lindor, Soto, Nimmo, or Alonso up.
I mean, it is crazy, but it's not insane. It'll never happen, but if it did, I would like to see it for a week.
Bring it up to Pete tomorrow.
I'd see it for a week.
I can't believe I'm going to say this. I think Tommy's right. I thought it was going to be stupid. I think it's not the worst idea.
And I'm flexible to where we put the guys. Maybe we could put Soto first. We could put Lindor ninth. We could put Alonso fourth. That, to me, is a flexible thing. But I think stretching out the four best hitters and putting them across the lineup, you will no longer run into the issue of, well, we're at the bottom of the order,
Evan,
and we can't get a hit.
You seem very, very troubled by this, Evan. Breathe before you speak.
Is this a rib?
No. This is identifying a problem and coming up with a solution.
And what I mean by is this a rib, is Sean and Tiki agreeing with you a rib?
No, hold on. I think it sounds idiotic. However, when you think about the Mets' problems and to think about when you keep trying the same thing over and over again, it's not working, sometimes you got to get drastic. I think everything, in essence, is crazy until you try it.
If you're going to lose 10 out of your last 11, and say this thing goes to, like, I don't know, 12 out of the last 15. Shouldn't you try something crazy? This is the bingo card you're talking about.
But think about the bottom of the order.
You have to do it for a little bit.
Right, yeah. Beatty, Mauricio, Sanger tonight. Imagine if you had Beatty, Alonso, Sanger. At least you know you'd have Pete there. So if you run into the bottom of the ninth inning, maybe have Lindor there in the eighth spot. And really, past the first inning, this idea of this guy's leading off, no disrespect to any of the guys, bat Juan Soto 7.
But what about we got to get the most at-bats to our best players? That's where Evan's going to fight.
That's the Evan fight, but my issue with this lineup right now is at the bottom of it is not very good.
Right.
So normally, yeah, I agree. Bat Ohtani first, get Lindor leadoff, Soto leadoff. I understand all of that. And you can bat Soto leadoff, so he gets the most at-bats out of anybody. They have an issue right now. They have a problem right now that is going to be tough to fix, even with Vientos coming back, until they start making trades or Vientos, Beatty, Mauricio, Alvarez, if he comes back up, hits. A way to solve that problem in the interim is to play zone. They play it in basketball, right? You see it in football. No more man-to-man. They need to play zone. They need to stretch out their four best hitters. So Lindor, Soto, Alonso, Nimmo, spread them out throughout the lineup. That's my plan.
And you like this plan, Teague?
I just think it's novel. I'd like to see it. It's 162 games.
And you like this plan, Sean?
Do it for a series.
I like it better than your plan, which is just hoping and wishing by giving the guys more at-bats.
Yeah. Yes, your plan's not working, Evan.
And do you think this would work?
Screaming at them saying, Juan Soto's got to be the carrier of this team. Juan Soto's got to be like King Aaron Judge. Juan Soto's got to score and hit and do everything because everybody else stinks. And yeah. Winker, come back, please, so we can DH you.
I have not offered an opinion on Tommy's idea yet. I'm being attacked. As if I've said anything yet.
Well, your face said everything.
I was trying to figure out if I was being ribbed, if this was all a prank on me. Because
all you're
going to
say is, they just got a hit. They just got a hit.
Well, yeah, sometimes that's actually
that's
true.
That's not going to work.
So you think in your mind, taking your four best hitters and splitting them up, putting holes in between them,
Evan,
you think that is the best
any
idea?
Any action is better than inaction. So kudos, Tommy. Kudos.
You know, before I offer you an opinion on this, can I take a caller and ask them their opinion on
this? Yeah, sure.
So it's not me, it's someone else. So Stuart's in East Hampton. Stuart heard Tommy's idea. Stuart, your thoughts.
So, first off, I don't think he's crazy. I coached third, fourth grade softball for the first time this year.
Oh, nice.
And I dealt with the same exact thoughts that Tommy's dealing with.
Did you do it?
Did you do it, Stuart? We did try it one time.
Okay.
But I might try it just to get out of the slump that they're in. But I think you need to take the one or two innings that you can have some batters to get some runs and kind of just chalk up an inning and a half and hopefully get lucky. Because if you spread it out like that and one of those guys doesn't work out, you're totally screwed.
Right.
So
right.
I don't think you're crazy, Tommy. I went through this whole thing.
Yeah.
But I think it's a little too much of a gamble. Right. You got to take the chunks and hope that you get the chunks that it works out. Instead of spreading it out.
Stuart identified the fatal flaw.
Yes.
That's the secret, whatever, inside the Death Star.
Yeah, they got holes all over the place?
No, because if whoever was batting cleanup, who was batting cleanup?
He didn't care.
Lindor?
He didn't care. He just put the guys up. Put Lindor there.
Lindor is 2-for-20 against the Braves or whatever it is, then it goes from 1 all the way to 7.
I do have to share this with you.
Go ahead.
I received a text message from somebody who, you know, works in baseball and knows baseball.
Nice.
And the message was simply does Tommy understand how baseball works? I'm just asking for a friend. And I'm going to be honest with you, my response to him was no. That was a very simple response. No.
Baseball is constantly evolving. You would agree to that? That the lineups that we saw in the 90s are different than now in baseball. Imagine a world where Shohei Ohtani would be leading off. If this was 1998, that would not be the case. Okay, right? Mm-hmm. Aaron Judge hitting high in the order. So I'm just trying to be a little ahead of the curve. Plus, it's an issue with the team. If they had a deep lineup, then I wouldn't have brought this up. But the bottom of that lineup is barren right now. You've got to stretch out your four best players.
Something very underrated is happening in this segment that you're not picking up on.
Go ahead.
Besides Tommy having this crazy idea that you two guys agree with, and I am doing my best to not even retort yet.
We're just intrigued by it.
Do you also know what Tommy has done that no one has called him out on? Not one person has called him out on it. Tommy is very negative. Mm. I mean, I haven't heard this guy.
They better do something.
And if they don't make a trade, the bottom of the lineup is barren. I've heard more negativity from Tommy in the last five minutes explaining his lineup idea than I have in a year.
There's no desperation in positive, Tommy. In fact, when I played beer pong, I would always save my one rack to the end. No desperation diamonds. It's not desperation. It's just identifying what's going on.
You said they got nothing in this lineup, and
no, I'm just speaking for everybody in general.
No, you were speaking for yourself.
Not necessarily. I'm just speaking for us. How many calls have we gotten? How many things have we heard over the station where these are the Mets' issues? So I'm identifying
one. Do you think they're real issues?
I think right now you could say that the bottom of the order is not performing the way we thought they would, especially the younger players like a Mauricio and Beatty. I think that's a fair thing to say.
Mm-hmm. I think we finally rediscovered negative Tommy. He came back. Let's hear more responses to Tommy's lineup idea, because I have done my best to bite my tongue.
One thing after another. Last night, I don't know what's up with these Achilles injuries, but again, another, you know, ugly, I don't know if I would label it gruesome, but not pleasant to watch. Griffin Canning's Achilles pop there right in front of us, and the Mets lose another starting pitcher. It feels bad, but I really feel like this organization is in a good spot to overcome it. Now, there's only so much you could take, but right now, if things go as expected, I still think the Mets will be fine in that rotation.
You know what's interesting? I agree with you. I do. First of all, the injuries that they've had to deal with are ridiculous. I mean, this is out of control here. And you got to give the Mets some credit here for being resilient, getting these couple of wins. I mean, the Braves, you know, when you fall that far behind and you get momentum again against the team that you're chasing, and then the team, like, as the Mets did the last two games, kind of push you back, that breaks some spirit right there. So that is a necessary response by the Mets. Good job. The crazy thing about the rotation, and it's been from day one in spring training, if I look at a rotation, now you got to get there. That's the key. There's no guarantee that all these guys come back and all these guys are healthy. But I see a path here. I see a vision with Manaea, Senga, Holmes, Peterson, and Montas now, who we've all left at, but at least the way he pitched the other night has to be deemed as an intriguing wild card. If they could get to September, forget about August, September and the playoffs with that rotation, that's a good rotation.
They almost had the perfect crossover. Obviously, you never want anybody to get hurt, but you mentioned it. They lost 2/5 of their starting rotation going into the year. Tyler McGill and Griffin Canning may not have made the roster, and yet they were in there, obviously, to start the season because both Manaea and Montas were out. And then just as Senga goes down, just as McGill goes down, they were ready to get Montas and Manaea back at some point. It just unfortunately didn't overlap with the perfect timing. So there's, you know, Blackburn has to take an extra start. Tidwell gets called up, all those things. But to your point, Montas coming back and pitching the way that he did, even though it was just one game, it was against the Braves. It was in a big spot, and he delivered. He looked good. If you could rely on him to be a solid arm, and it's not that bad with Manaea, hopefully, as he gets closer to return, one more rehab start, even with the loose bodies, and he comes back. Now you're getting two big reinforcements back in that rotation. So even losing Canning and losing Senga and losing McGill, you're getting two of those guys back. Now, you do have some concerns with Holmes and the innings, and maybe he's fatigued a little bit. You want to make sure you get Manaea back. And, you know, you're going to have to, even in that circumstance, go with either Blackburn or Tidwell to be the fifth starter. But that's before Senga returns. So I don't think it's as bad as it seems. And I feel like the Mets are built because of the depth. I mean, we're talking about nine deep in that rotation. Obviously, some better than others, but still solid big league starts with those guys. I don't think, even with the unfortunate injury to Canning, which sucks because he was pitching pretty well for them until recently.
Yeah, last couple starts shaky.
Yeah, and I trust him to be like a solid, just a fourth, fifth starter, go out there and pitch, give you five, maybe six innings. But it sucks to have that happen. I think the Mets could overcome it.
Well, you know, that's why you build a team this way. And that's one of the visions you and I have talked about. Now, there's certain situations, and so far it's worked out. For some teams around baseball where they just invest more heavily in the starting pitching, give guys big deals. Yanks have done it with Cole. Yanks have done it with Fried. It's worked out for them. And really the strength in numbers, though, for the Mets is an approach that, you know, going into a season, I don't love. I do prefer a couple of, you know, locks, if you will, or not from a health perspective, but at least from a stat perspective or an accomplishment perspective. There were a lot of wild cards on this Mets staff going in, a lot of reclamation projects. And we saw it a year ago, and it worked out well. Now, listen, I don't want to sound insensitive at all, or it sucks for Kane. He's out for an entire year. Who knows what happens to his career? But let's call for what it is. If Griffin Canning was on the mound in October starting a game for the Mets, then something went wrong.
Right.
I know he was pitching well, but I said this, the last couple of starts, to me, that's Griffin Canning. That's who he is. Doesn't have great stuff, not somebody I want on the mound in October. So, yeah, I wish him well, and I hope that it's going to come, and he's going to come back at some point and finish his career. But you need Manaea, you need Senga, you need Holmes, you need Peterson. And again, Montas, the interesting wild card, but Canning was not going to pitch against the Dodgers if you get back to the NLCS or the Phillies in the NLDS. He wasn't.
He'd probably be their sixth
starter.
He'd probably be their sixth best starter. But what happens now is, and I'd be lying to you if I said, God, they may need an arm now. Like both you and I, we could get into that, their biggest needs. Both you and I thought that they need offense first and foremost to fix this team. But once Canning goes down, now you really, like their depth has taken a major hit here to a point where Blackburn's going to have to be in the rotation for now.
Yes. And Tidwell probably, Tidwell, right?
At least for one turn through until Manaea comes back. And then when Manaea does come back, it's either going to be Blackburn or Tidwell. I would assume that they're going to go Blackburn. But either way, so now when you have a rotation with him in it, that's a little bit of a problem until you get Senga back. But the problem that you have, BT, bigger picture, is without Canning, who I view as their sixth best starter, if everybody is healthy, now what happens? I mean, it's still, you know, we're approaching July, but we're still in June. What if something else goes wrong here? Like, they've already got hit. Okay, can McGill come back at some point? Maybe. But what if something else goes wrong? You can make an argument that they need maybe not a top-end starter, but they need a starting pitcher, because if it doesn't go perfectly with Montas or Manaea or Senga takes a while or something happens with Holmes, like, those are still variables that are not just worst-case scenario. Like, it's realistic that Holmes could tire out here quickly. It's realistic that Senga might not come back when we expect him to come back. It's realistic that Manaea might have an issue. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's realistic that Frankie Montas, who's always hurt dating back to his days with the Yankees, might get hurt again. They're okay for now.
Yeah.
But they cannot absorb any more setbacks or any more injuries to that starting rotation. They cannot withstand that.
Yeah, and by the way, that's why I think the last two wins were so important here, because to get that separation, that real obvious separation from the Braves, you know, now in the standings, now as you go through another turn of the rotation, or even as you get into, let's say, you know, middle of July here, you know, you can kind of roll out a Blackburn, you know, hope you outslug a team. You know, you can roll out a Tidwell. All right, here we go. Let's see what he can do. But, like, think about this, Sal. Now, again, the timing stinks for Canning, but imagine if Senga pulled his hamstring 2 days ago.
Right.
And imagine if Benaya's, you know, shoulder became an issue 5 days ago or a week ago. I mean, those guys are basically knocking on the door of returning. And I get it. I mean, yeah, it's easy to sit here and say, well, yeah, loose bodies floating around on that. No big deal. Not my elbow. I get right. it. But as I said yesterday, I don't believe it's a big deal for Manaea. And obviously, a hamstring is not like an Achilles, even though Senga takes forever to heal based on last year. They will get those guys back. It's a one-team race until it's not, until the Braves, you know, reassert themselves or whatever, reestablish themselves and get hot against a team other than the Mets. I mean, the Rockies and the Marlins have handled them. So, really, it's the Mets and the Phillies. And even with the Blackburns and the Tidwells probably pitching for another 2 weeks or so, they should be fine in terms of the playoffs. Now, winning the division, it's a different conversation. Playoffs, I still think the Mets are okay.
Right, but if one more thing happens.
Well, that's true.
Then what?
Well,
right now, if the and I do think the Mets are going to make multiple moves, but starter to me wasn't even on the radar, really. It was always best bullpen arm available and maybe go get two professional bats rather than like one big fish. That's where you and I disagree with that. I wanted a legit big league center fielder. I'd like a legit big league third baseman. Vientos coming back. Maybe that'll help. I still don't know if you want him in at third base. I'd rather move him to DH and get a, you know, real third baseman who could field a little bit, be a professional bat. Either way, that's what I would value. But now if you're throwing in a starter into that mix, which I think is a realistic possibility, whoever it may be, like Severino, whatever, you pick a guy. You know, I'm not talking about schemes. I'm talking about a regular starter just in strength by numbers, because they know. If you're trying to win a World Series, you can't roll the risk of saying, all right, well, we're going to get Manaea back. We got Montas back. We're going to get Senga back. We got Holmes here. He'll be all right. You got Peterson. Maybe McGill will return. Like, you can't run that risk of even those six or seven guys, if you want to throw Blackburn in there, that's going to be enough, because if something happens to one of the top guys,
Now you're in big trouble.
Okay, so if that's the case, then don't you think Stern should do it now? Like, what are we waiting for? I don't mean tonight, but
yeah.
If that's the philosophy, which I agree with and I don't, and I'll get back to why I don't in a minute, but if that's what the Mets, what you think they should do, I'm not going to wait for another team to have an injury. I'm going out and I'm being proactive. I'm getting the arm that you think they need to get today or tomorrow or next week.
Yeah, well, I mean, if they could go get Luis Severino now and just take the money and get the A's out from under it, then that's fine. I think the Mets are going to have to be smart here and also use multiple resources to acquire the necessary pieces to build this team into a World Series caliber roster. And that may, in fact, now include adding a starting pitcher. So if you could add a starter by just taking on salary, check. Then you go out there, maybe have to give up prospects to get a bullpen arm, check. Whatever it may be to get a bat or two, like they're going to have to do that. Maybe it's a combo of both, prospect and money. The Mets are in a spot where this is not a wait and see. This is not, all right, let's roll the dice and see how far we could go. You've got a month to figure out what you believe this team is, and they showed enough resilience here. Even in this brutal 3-7 stretch in the 10 games against the Braves and Phillies, they did what they had to, and that is save face and split these four games with Atlanta, winning these final two games here. They're still in first place. Now it's okay. We know we have a good ball club. How can we make it a World Series caliber ball club? I just don't know if you could trust that with the rotation right now, which I like and think they could overcome it. If one thing goes wrong, that's a big risk if you lose one of those guys where there's already some fragility to it.
Yeah, and think about this, Al. If you were going to go 2-2 in this four-game series, from a Mets perspective, you much prefer it to go according to the script that it did. You know, imagine if they had the season-ending injury, and I know they've got to wait for the MRI confirmation, but that's a ruptured Achilles. He's out.
Yeah.
And they'll confirm that.
We literally saw it. You can see it roll up again.
Atrocious. You just knew right away. But the point is, if they would have won the first two games, right, and then lost the next two games, which in the matter that they lost the first two, think about the tone around the Mets today. Like, if they lost last night, lost the night before, lost Griffin Canning. I think the tone, some people go overboard anyway. That's what fans do. I get it. It's all good. We you and I both do it from time to time as well. But the fact that they stabilized it last night, and based on the depth of the staff, they seem to be, I believe, equipped to handle this at least for a couple of weeks. I still think the Mets are in good shape. But I'll tell you one thing. You look at their GM, like we know, and we'll get to the Yanks later, right? And we'll actually do a Met-Yankee midway point kind of thing, and we'll do that at 11. We know how Brian Cashman, like there's no guessing. We know what Cashman values. We know what Cashman does. We know what he does well. We know what he stinks at. What we're learning, or, because I always tell you, what we're going to learn about Stearns here, we know he's young. We know he's smart. We know he's astute. We know he values kind of not reclamation projects, but a different approach to pitching. What we're going to learn is he as aggressive as he needs to be, and is he as adaptable as I think you and I both think he needs to be to at least get a reinforcement in soon rather than later?
Right, and I think it's something that the Met fan base has wanted for the last several years, you know, going back to 2022, where it was, hey, this team could be legit, go out there and be aggressive at the deadline.
Yeah, like with the Ruff and Vogelbach stuff.
And Billy Epler was not enough. Now, you could say that what was available, it wasn't available. Okay, fine, but here we are now, years later, it cannot be anymore. Well, let's wait and see. Let's see what we have. Maybe next year we'll do this, or let's hold on to the prospects. Or no, this is now, okay, they've shown that they have some fight. Thank goodness, finally beating the Braves here two games. Now, still not enough because they had the opportunity to bury the Braves and put a fork in them over the course of these last 10 games, and they didn't. Now, it's really no harm, no foul. Okay, you started 13 games up. You're 10 games up still after taking on all that they have. I don't think it's bad, or certainly as bad as it could have been. But they had the chance to really bury them and keep them 13 games back, whatever it was. They didn't. But still, they're in a position where they're going to be contending to win the NL East. They're going to be a legit contender in the National League, try to win a World Series. This is the year. I don't want to hear any excuses. Not prospects, not money, nothing. Go for it. They have to be aggressive. I don't need a big move, but they need to figure out what moves are going to help them build a ball club. And now, you know, unfortunately, with all the injuries, it went from, maybe they need a bullpen arm, definitely need a bat. Now it's like, well, they got to really figure it out here over the course of the next month, in fact, what they need, and that might include another arm in that rotation. BT and Sal on the Fan. Our friends at Town Fair Tire remind you that at Town Fair Tire, you always get the guaranteed lowest price on name brand tires from Connecticut to Maine. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. Larry is in Westchester starting us off. What's up, Larry?
Hey, Sal, BT, how you guys doing?
How are you?
What's up, buddy?
Good. Listen, I just wanted to expand on a possible blockbuster trade that I think they could do to improve this roster. One of your callers touched on it yesterday about Brian Buxton on the Twins. If I'm Stearns, I would go to the Twins and not only try and get Buxton, but get Carlos Correa as well.
Oh,
and then
these prospects
like Beatty, Acuna, even Alvarez, take your pick, Minnesota, because you know they're going to dump salary. Get pretty much out of it. And I would even give them one of these lower pitchers that's a prospect. You solidify two positions with those two guys. You know Minnesota don't want to pay Correa $30 million for the next 3 years.
And why would the Mets want to do that, though, Larry? Like, you got to be realistic at some point. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, well, the Mets would do it because, like you said, Sal, they're in a win-now mode. And they're not winning with the top bottom five of these guys in this lineup. It's horrible. When you have Jeff McNeil hitting fifth, you're not going to go anywhere. They got to shake this up, this roster. And I'm tired of waiting for these prospects to develop.
Understood.
Most of the time, they never do.
Understood, Larry, and thank you for the call. I'm not taking on the money of Carlos Correa at this point. The Mets dodged a bullet a few years ago, whatever it was, that they were going to go out there and sign Correa and then check the medicals and it fell apart. I love Correa as a player, postseason specifically, BT.
I think
he's got that tough gene. You like that? I'm not taking on that salary, especially when the Mets have bigger needs. I'm not opposed to Buxton. I think that'd be great if they could figure out a way to get him. But I want Aroldis Chapman or a top bullpen arm if I'm the Mets, and I want a little more depth in that rotation just in case something goes wrong with one of the four top starters.
Dude, Correa's got 6 home runs and 20 RBIs. His OPS isn't even over 700. He's got a lot of big money. Now, the next 3 years are all guaranteed north of 30, but then there's team options in terms of buyouts, so it's more palatable. Now, you don't need Correa now. But I think that the concept of what the last caller brought up should apply to the Mets. And, boy, it's almost never applied to the Mets. Like, they need to be able to identify players that can really help. And I agree. I think they need a big stick. Right. You know that, right? So, and now, maybe an arm. You have to go around and say, all right, this team's hemorrhaging money. This owner's cheap. This team has no designs on winning. This is where Cohen's got to flex. To me, this is the point, really, that is going to separate the Cohen era from every other Mets era, okay? Because now they can say, hey, here's the checkbook. We need this. We need that. You ain't winning. We'll take that guy. Here's the money. Let's go.
Right.
And you don't need to give up great prospects to do it. You just got to offset their financial headaches. And they've got the wherewithal to do it. And I'm very curious to see if Cohen's going to do it.
And I'm not asking to have a billion-dollar payroll or get ridiculous. Worry about the offseason and next year, in the moment right now. Figure it out. Take on the money. You could certainly absorb the blow. Again, I'm not saying get ridiculous. Like, Correa wouldn't want, even if you were producing.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
I love the play. I'm not taking on another $30 million. Like, if we're going to do that, you might as well go get Rafi Devers, which they didn't do.
Or Bregman.
And they didn't do it. Exactly. I'd rather have a better player. But even that, Bregman I don't think is that bad, the contract-wise. That's why I would look into that.
Mm.
Bregman-Chapman, I'd love that combination. Now, that doesn't help the center fielder. Could they work on a blockbuster and get 3 guys from Boston if you want to throw in Durant? I mean, I don't know what that would take on. Either way, there are moves to be made, and now's not the time to be worried about whatever luxury tax threshold or whatever future stuff. Worry about the future, and you could cut payroll if you need to after this year. They should be going all in with this team trying to win a World
Series. And this is what I heard from all the Met fans, you, everybody, and I get it. You want a lot of things, okay? Sustainability, you wanted Soto, wanted that expectation, ceiling raise, gotcha. But this is what you really wanted. The ability, because when you talk about the dynamics of the Mets over the years and their financial limitations and, just the handcuffs that they placed on themselves financially, to me, outside of the losses, that had to be the most frustrating thing of being a Mets fan. Come on, man. We're a New York team and we're not acting like it. We're not operating like one. You got a good team. Not a great team. You got a flawed team, but you got enough good components to make a real run. Go out there and flex with that money and make yourself a great team.